The Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, read by Duncan Steen. Book 1. From my grandfather Verus, I learned good morals and the government of my temper. From the reputation and remembrance of my father, modesty and a manly character. From my mother, piety and beneficence, and abstinence, not only from evil deeds, but even from evil thoughts. And further, simplicity in my way of living, far removed from the habits of the rich. From my great-grandfather, not to have frequented public schools, and to have had good teachers at home, and to know that on such things a man should spend liberally. From my tutor, to be neither of the green nor of the blue party at the games in the circus, nor a partisan either of the Parmularius or the Scutarius at the gladiators' fights. From him, too, I learned to endure pain, and to want little, and to work with my own hands, and not to meddle with other people's affairs, and not to be ready to listen to slander. From Diognetus, not to get excited about trifling things, and not to give credit to what was said by miracle workers and sorcerers about incantations and driving away demons and such things, and not to breed quails for fighting, nor to give myself up to a passion for such things, and to allow people to have their say, and to have become intimate with philosophy, and to have gone to hear Bacchius, and then Tandarsis, and Marcianus, and to have written essays in my youth, and to have been happy with a plank bed and a hide for covering, and whatever else goes with the Greek discipline. From Rusticus, I received the impression that my character required improvement and discipline, and from him I learned not to be led astray into over-elaborate prose, not writing with my head in the clouds, nor delivering little encouraging talks, nor talking up the practice of austerities or good works, and to abstain from rhetoric and poetry and fine writing, and not to walk about in the house in my outdoor dress, nor to do other things of the kind, and to write letters in a simple style, like the letter which Rusticus himself wrote from Sinuessa to my mother. And with respect to those who have offended me by words or done me wrong, to be easily disposed to be pacified and reconciled, as soon as they have shown a readiness to be reconciled. And to read carefully, and not to be satisfied with a superficial understanding of a book, nor hastily to give my assent to those who talk overmuch. And I am indebted to him for being acquainted with the discourses of Epictetus, which he communicated to me out of his own collection. From Apollonius I learned freedom of will and undeviating steadiness of purpose, and to take no other viewpoint even for a moment but that of reason, and to be always the same in sharp physical pain, on the occasion of the loss of a child, and in long illness, and to see clearly, in his own example, that the same man can be both most resolute and yielding, and not peevish in giving his instruction, and have had before my eyes a man who clearly considered his experience and his skill in expounding philosophical principles as the smallest of his merits. And from him I learned how to receive from friends what might be esteemed favours, without being either put in an awkward position by them, or letting them pass unnoticed. From Sextus, a benevolent disposition, and the example of a family governed in a fatherly manner, and the idea of living conformably to nature, and gravity without affectation, and to look carefully after the interests of friends, and to tolerate ordinary folk and those who voice unconsidered opinions. He had the power of readily accommodating himself to all, so that conversation with him was more agreeable than any flattery. And at the same time he was most highly venerated by those who associated with him, and he had the faculty both of discovering and ordering, in an intelligent and methodical way, the necessary principles of life. And he never showed anger or any other passion. But with this complete freedom from passion came great affection. And he expressed approbation without fanfare, and carried much knowledge without ostentation. From Alexander the Grammarian, to refrain from fault-finding, and from chidingly breaking into someone's utterance to correct a barbarous choice of vocabulary, or a solecism of syntax or pronunciation, but dexterously to introduce the proper expression in the form of an answer or a confirmation, or in the course of some further discussion of the subject itself, rather than how it is expressed or by some other skilful manoeuvre. From Fronto, I learned to observe the effect of envy and duplicity and hypocrisy when there is absolute power, and that generally those among us who are called patricians are rather deficient in paternal affection. From Alexander the Platonist, not to frequently or without real necessity say to anyone or write in a letter that I have no time, nor continually to excuse the neglect of duties that our various relationships with people require of us by alleging urgent business to be attended to. From Catullus, not to be indifferent when a friend finds fault with us, even if it be an unreasonable criticism, but to try to restore him to his usual disposition towards us, and to be ready to speak gratefully of teachers, as it is reported of Domitius and Athenodotus, and to love my children truly. From my brother Severus, to love my kin, and to love truth, and to love justice, and through him I learned to know the character of Thrasea, Helvidius, Cato, Dion, Brutus, and from him I got the idea of a polity in which there is the same law for all, a polity administered with regard to equal rights and equal freedom of speech, and the idea of a kingly government that respects most of all the freedom of the governed. I learned from him also consistency and undeviating steadiness in my regard for philosophy, and a disposition to do good, and to give to others readily, and to cherish an optimistic outlook, and to believe that I am loved by my friends. And in him I observed no concealment of his opinions with respect to those whom he condemned, and that his friends had no need to conjecture what he wished or did not wish, but it was quite plain. From Maximus I learned self-government, and not to be diverted by trifles, and cheerfulness in all circumstances, even in illness, and a just admixture in the moral character of sweetness and dignity, and to get on with what must be done without complaining. I observed that everybody believed that he thought as he spoke, and that in all that he did he never had any bad intention, and he never showed amazement and surprise, was never in a hurry, and never put off doing a thing, nor was perplexed nor dejected, nor did he ever laugh to disguise his vexation, nor, on the other hand, was he ever furious or suspicious. He was accustomed to do acts of beneficence, and was ready to forgive, and was free from all falsehood. And he presented the appearance of a man who by nature could not be diverted from right, rather than one who was so by training. I observed, too, that no man could ever think that he was despised by Maximus, or ever venture to think himself a better man. He had also the art of being humorous in an agreeable way. In my adoptive father, I observed mildness of temper, and unchangeable resolution in the things that he had determined upon after due deliberation, and no vain glory in those things that men call honours, and a love of labour and perseverance, and a readiness to listen to those who had anything to propose for the common good, and undeviating firmness in giving to every man according to his deserts, and a knowledge derived from experience of when to act vigorously and when to let be. And I observed that he had overcome all passion for boys, and he considered himself no more than any other citizen, and he released his entourage from all obligation to dine with him, or to attend him of necessity when he went abroad, and those who had failed to accompany him by reason of any urgent circumstances always found him the same in his favour towards them. I observed, too, his habit of careful inquiry in council meetings, his persistency, that he never dropped his investigation out of being satisfied with first appearances, and his disposition to keep his friends, being neither soon tired of them nor extravagant in his affection, and his self-mastery and cheerfulness, and his ability to see things coming from a long way off, and his discreet provision for the smallest detail, and his immediate check on public applause and all flattery, and his watchfulness over the things which were necessary for the administration of the empire, and his good management of expenditure, and his patience in putting up with the blame that he got for such conduct. He was neither cravenly superstitious with respect to the gods, nor did he court men by gifts or by trying to please them, or by winning the support of the populace, but he showed sobriety in all things and firmness, and never a small-minded thought or action, nor love of novelty. And the things that make life comfortable and of which fortune gave him an abundant supply, he used without arrogance and without excusing himself, so that when he had them he enjoyed them without affectation, and when he had them not, he did not regret their absence. No one could ever say of him that he was a sophist or a jumped-up nobody or a pedant, but everyone acknowledged him to be a man of matured understanding, above flattery, able to manage his own and other men's affairs. Besides this, he honoured those who were true philosophers, and he did not reproach those who pretended to be philosophers, nor yet was he easily led by them. He was also easy in conversation, and he made himself agreeable without any offensive affectation. He took a reasonable care of his body's health, not as one who was greatly attached to life, nor out of regard to personal appearance, nor yet in a careless way, but so that through his own attention he very seldom stood in need of the physician's art or medicine or external applications. He was most ready to defer without envy to those who possessed a particular skill, such as eloquence or knowledge of the law or of ethics or some such specialism, and he gave them his help that each might enjoy a reputation according to their deserts. And he always acted conformably to the institutions of his country without showing any affectation of doing so. Further, he was not fond of change nor unsteady, but he loved to stay in the same places and to employ himself about the same things. And after his migraine attacks, he came immediately fresh and vigorous to his usual occupations. He kept very few secrets, and these only about matters of state, and he showed prudence and economy in the provision of public spectacles, the construction of public buildings, the distribution of donations to the people, and all such things, for he was a man who looked to what ought to be done, not to the reputation that might come with the doing of it. He did not take baths at unseasonable hours. He was not fond of building houses, nor fussy about what he ate, nor about the texture and colour of his clothes, nor about the beauty of his slaves. His dress came from Lorium, his villa on the coast, and from Lanuvium generally. We know how he behaved to the toll collector at Tusculum, who asked his pardon. And such was all his behaviour. There was in him nothing harsh, nor implacable, nor violent, nor, as one may say, anything he would get into a great sweat about. But he examined all things severally, as if he had abundance of time, and without confusion, mindfully, vigorously, and consistently. And that might be applied to him which is recorded of Socrates, that he was able both to abstain from and to enjoy those things which many are too weak to abstain from and cannot enjoy without excess, but to be strong enough both to bear the one and to be sober in the other is the mark of a man who has a perfect and invincible soul, equal to that shown by Maximus in his illness. To the gods I am indebted for having good grandfathers, good parents, a good sister, good teachers, good associates, good kinsmen and friends, nearly everything good. Further, I owe it to the gods that I was not precipitated into any offence against any of them, even though I had a disposition which, if opportunity had offered, might have led me to do something of this kind. But through their favour there never was such a concurrence of circumstances as put me to the trial. Further, I am thankful to the gods that I was not longer brought up with my grandfather's concubine, and that I preserved my innocence, not making proof of my virility before the proper time came for it, but even leaving it longer than that. I am grateful also to have been subjected to a ruler and a father who was able to take away all pride from me, and to bring me to the knowledge that it is possible for a man to live in a palace without needing bodyguards or embroidered uniforms or torches and statues and such like show, but that it is in such a man's power to bring himself very near to the fashion of a private person, without being for this reason either meaner in thought or more remiss in action, with respect to the things that must be done for the public interest in a manner that befits a ruler. I thank the gods for giving me such a brother that was able by his moral character to rouse me to vigilance over myself, and who at the same time pleased me by his respect and affection, that my children have not been stupid or physically deformed, that I did not achieve more proficiency in rhetoric, poetry, and the other studies, in which I might well, perhaps, have been completely engaged if I had seen that I was making progress in them, that I made haste to appoint my teachers to the positions of honour that they evidently craved, without putting them off on account of their youth, with the hope that I might do so in the future, that I came to know Apollonius, Rusticus, Maximus, that I received a clear and frequent impression of what a life lived according to nature might consist in, so that where it concerns the gods, their gifts and help and inspiration, nothing hindered me from forthwith living according to nature, though I still fall short of it through my own fault, and through not observing the admonitions of the gods, and, I may almost say, their direct instructions, that my body has held out so long in such a kind of life, that I never touched either Benedicta or Theodotus, and that having later fallen into amatory passions, I was cured. And though I was often out of humour with Rusticus, I never did anything of which I had occasion to repent. That though it was my mother's fate to die young, she spent the last years of her life with me. That whenever I wished to help any man in his need or on any other occasion, I was never told that I had not the means of doing it, and that I never had such a need myself of financial assistance from another. That I have such a wife, so obedient, so affectionate and artless. That I had an abundance of good teachers for my children, and that I have had the help of my dreams in revealing to me remedies against, among other things, spitting blood and dizzy spells, and that, when I had an inclination to philosophy, I did not fall into the hands of any sophist, and that I did not waste my time on the study of literature or resolving intellectual puzzles, or occupy myself with examining the movements of the heavens, for all these things require the help of the gods and fortune. Book 2. Composed among the Quadi on the River Gran. Begin the morning by saying to yourself, I shall meet with people who are busybodies, ungrateful, arrogant, deceitful, envious, selfish. All these things trouble them by reason of their ignorance of what is good and evil. But I have seen that the nature of the good is that it is beautiful, and of the bad that it is ugly, and that the nature of him who does wrong is akin to my own nature, not in the sense of being of the same blood or seed, but in that it participates in the same intelligence and the same portion of the divinity. So I cannot be injured by any of them, for no one can fix on me what is ugly, nor can I be angry with my kinsman, nor hate him. For we are born for cooperation, like feet, like hands, like eyelids, like the rows of the upper and lower teeth. To act against one another, then, is contrary to nature. and getting vexed with or turning away from someone is to act against them. Whatever it is that I am is a little flesh and breath and the sovereign mind. Throw away your books, no longer distract yourself, but think like this, as if you were now dying. Despise the flesh. It is blood and bones and a network, a contexture of nerves, veins and arteries. See the breath also, what kind of a thing it is. Air, and not always the same, but every moment sent out and again sucked in. As for the sovereign mind, consider thus. You are an old man. No longer let this be a slave, a puppet, pulled this way and that by selfish impulses. No longer be dissatisfied with your present situation, or shrink from the future. All that is from the gods is full of providence. That which is from fortune is not separate from nature, or without an interweaving and involution with the things that are ordered by providence. From thence all things flow, and there is besides necessity, and that which is for the advantage of the whole universe, of which you are a part. Now that is good for every part of nature, which the nature of the whole brings, and that which serves to maintain this nature. And the universe is preserved by change, by the changes of the elements themselves, as by the changes of things compounded of the elements. Let these principles be enough for you. Let them always be fixed opinions, and let go of the thirst after books, that you may not die complaining, but cheerfully, truly, and from your heart thankful to the gods. Remember how long you have been putting off these things, and how often the gods have put opportunity in your way, and yet you do not use it. You must now at last take cognizance of the universe of which you are a part, and the administrator of the universe of which your existence is a manifestation, and that a limit of time is fixed for you, which if you do not use for clearing away the clouds from your mind, it will go and you will go, and the opportunity will never return. Every moment think steadily as a Roman and a man to do what you have in hand with perfect and simple dignity, and affectionate feeling, and freedom from passion, and justice, and to give your mind relief from all other thoughts. And you will give your mind relief if you perform every action of your life as if it were the last, laying aside all carelessness and passionate aversion from the commands of reason, and all hypocrisy and self-love, and discontent with a portion which has been given to you. You see how few things a man needs to lay hold of in order to be able to live a life that flows in quiet, and is like the existence of the gods. For the gods on their part will require nothing more from him who observes these things. Do wrong to yourself, you do wrong to yourself, my soul, and you will no longer have the opportunity of giving yourself respect. Everyone's life is but a moment, but though yours is nearly finished, your soul does not reverence itself, but places your felicity on the souls of others. Do external things that fall upon your attention distract you? Give yourself time to learn something new and good, and cease to be whirled around by them. But then you must also avoid being carried about the other way, for those too are triflers who have wearied themselves in life by their activity, and yet have no goal to which to direct every movement of the mind, in a word, all their thoughts. Through not observing what is in the mind of another, a man has seldom been seen to be unhappy. But those who do not observe the movements of their own minds must of necessity be unhappy. This you must always bear in mind. What is the nature of the whole, and what is my nature, and how this is related to that, and what kind of a part it is of what kind of a whole, and that there is no one who hinders you from always doing and saying things that accord with the nature of which you are a part. Theophrastus, in his comparison of evil actions, such a comparison as one would make in accordance with the common notions of mankind, says, like a true philosopher, that the offences that are committed through desire are more blamable than those that are committed through anger. For he who is excited by anger seems to turn away from reason with a certain pain and unconscious contraction. But he who offends through desire, being overpowered by pleasure, seems to be in a manner more intemperate and less manly in his offences. Rightly, then, and in a way worthy of philosophy, he said that the offence which is committed with pleasure is more blamable than that which is committed with pain, and on the whole the one is more like a person who has been initially wronged and is compelled to be angry through pain, but the other is moved by his own impulse to do wrong, being carried towards doing something by desire. Since it is possible that you may depart from life this very moment, regulate every act and thought accordingly. But to go away from among men, if there are gods, is not a thing to be afraid of, for the gods will not involve you in evil. But if indeed they do not exist, or if they have no concern about human affairs, what is it to me to live in a universe devoid of gods or devoid of providence? But in truth they do exist, and they do care for human things, and they have put all the means in man's power to enable him not to fall into real evils. And as to the rest, if there was anything evil, they would have provided for this also, that it should be altogether in a man's power not to fall into it. Now that which does not make a man worse, how can it make a man's life worse? But neither through ignorance, nor having the knowledge but not the power to guard against or correct these things, can it be possible that the nature of the universe has overlooked them, nor is it possible that it has made so great a mistake, either through want of power or want of skill, that good and evil should happen indiscriminately to the good and the bad. Certainly, death and life, honour and dishonour, pain and pleasure, all these things equally happen to good men and bad. But they are not things that make us either better or worse. Therefore they are neither good nor evil. How quickly all things disappear, our bodies themselves into the universe, and into time the remembrance of them. What is the nature of all sense objects, and particularly those that enthrall with the bait of pleasure or terrify by pain, or are noised abroad on the empty vapour of fame? How worthless and contemptible and sordid and perishable and dead they are! All this it is the part of the intellectual faculty to observe. And to observe further, who are they whose opinions and voices accord reputation? What is death? And the fact that if a man looks at death in itself, and by the abstractive power of reflection separates out all the things that gather around it in the imagination, he will then consider it to be nothing else than an operation of nature. And if anyone is afraid of an operation of nature, he is a child. And this is not only an operation of nature, but it is also a thing that conduces to nature's purposes. To observe, too, how does man come near to the deity, and by what part of him, and when this part of man is so disposed. Nothing is more wretched than a man who runs circles round everything, and as the poet Pindar says, pries into the things beneath the earth, and seeks by conjecture what is in the minds of his neighbours, without perceiving that it is enough to attend to the guardian spirit within him, and to reverence it sincerely. And reverence of the guardian spirit consists in keeping it pure from passion and thoughtlessness, and dissatisfaction with what comes from gods and men. For the things from the gods merit veneration for their excellence, and the things from men should be dear to us by reason of kinship, though sometimes in a way they also move our pity by reason of men's ignorance of good and bad, this defect being not less than that which deprives us of the power of distinguishing black from white. Though you should be going to live 3,000 years, and as many times 10,000 years, Still remember that no man loses any other life than this which he now lives, nor lives any other than this which he now loses. The longest life and the shortest are thus brought to the same condition. For the present is the same to all, and that which perishes is also the same. And so that which is lost is but a mere moment. For a man cannot lose either the past or the future, for how can any one take from a man what he does not have? These two things, then, you must bear in mind. The one, that all things from eternity are of like forms and come round in a circle, and that it makes no difference whether a man shall see the same things during 100 years or 200 or an infinite time. And the second, that the longest liver and he who will die soonest lose just the same. For the present is the only thing of which a man can be deprived, if it is true that this is the only thing which he has. A man cannot lose a thing if he does not have it. All experience is formed by thinking. What was said by the cynic Monimus is quite clear, and quite clear too is the usefulness of what was said, if one takes from it what may be got out of it as far as it is true. The soul of man does violence to itself, first of all, when it becomes a separate growth, as it were, a tumour on the universe, so far as it can. For to be vexed at anything that happens is a separation of ourselves from nature, in some part of which the natures of all other things are contained. In the next place, the soul does violence to itself when it turns away from any man, or even moves towards him with the intention of injuring him, such as are the souls of those who are angry. In the third place, the soul does violence to itself when it is overpowered by pleasure or by pain. Fourthly, when it plays a part, and does or says anything insincerely and untruly. Fifthly, when it allows any act of its own and any movement to be without an aim, and does anything thoughtlessly and without considering what it is, it being right that even the smallest things be done with reference to an end. And the end of rational animals is to follow the reason and the law of the most ancient city and polity of all, that is, the universe itself. In a human life, the temporal extent of it is a point. The substance of it is a flux or flow, its perception is dull, and the composition of the whole body subject to putrefaction, and the mind a whirl. Its fortune is hard to divine, and its fame impossible to judge. In a word, everything that belongs to the body is a stream, and what belongs to the mind is a dream and vapour, and life is a warfare and a stranger's sojourn, and the end of all fame is oblivion. What then may guide a man? One thing, and this only, philosophy. But this consists in keeping the guardian spirit within a man free from violence and unharmed, superior to pains and pleasures, doing nothing without purpose, nor yet falsely or with hypocrisy, not feeling the need of another man's doing or not doing anything. Moreover, accepting all that happens and all that is allotted as coming from that source, wherever it is, from whence he himself came. And finally, waiting for death with a cheerful mind, as being nothing else than a dissolution of the elements of which every living being is compounded. Now, if there is no harm to the elements themselves in the way that each continually changes into another, why should a man have any apprehension about the change and dissolution of all the elements? For it is according to nature, and nothing is evil that is according to nature. Book 3. This written in Carnuntum. We ought to consider not only that our life is daily wasting away and a smaller part of it is left, but another thing also must be taken into account, which is that if a man should live longer, it is quite uncertain whether the understanding will remain sufficiently capable of comprehending things, and retain the power of contemplation that strives to acquire knowledge of the divine and the human. For if he shall begin to fall into dementia, other faculties like perspiration, nutrition, imagination, appetite, and so on, will not fail, but the power of making use of ourselves, and filling up the measure of our duty, and clearly separating all appearances, and considering whether a man should now depart from life, and whatever else of the kind absolutely requires a disciplined reason, all this is already extinguished. We must make haste, then, not only because we are daily nearer to death, but also because the conception of things and the understanding of them cease first. We ought to observe also that even the unlooked-for things that attend on natural processes contain something pleasing and attractive. For instance, when bread is baked, there is some splitting at the surface, and where the loaf cracks open in a fashion contrary to the purpose of the baker's art, it is in some way beautiful and particularly excites the appetite. And again, figs, when they are quite ripe, gape open, and in the ripe olives, the very circumstance of their being near to rottenness adds a peculiar beauty to the fruit. And the ears of corn bending down, and the lion's wrinkled brows, and the foam that flows from the mouth of wild boars, and many other things, though they are far from being beautiful when examined on their own, still, because they are consequent upon those natural processes, they help to adorn them, and they please the mind, so that if a man should have a feeling and a deeper insight with respect to the things that are produced in the universe, there is hardly one of those consequences that attend on them which will not seem to him to be in a manner disposed so as to give pleasure. And so he will see even the real gaping jaws of wild beasts with no less pleasure than those which painters and sculptors show by imitation. And in an old woman and an old man he will be able to see a certain maturity and comeliness, and the attractive loveliness of his own slave boys he will be able to look on with chaste eyes. And many such things will present themselves, not pleasing to every man, but to him only, who has become truly familiar with nature and her works. Hippocrates, after curing many diseases, himself fell sick and died. The Chaldean astrologers foretold the deaths of many, and then fate caught them too. Alexander and Pompey and Julius Caesar, after so often completely destroying whole cities, and in battle cutting to pieces many 10,000s of cavalry and infantry, themselves too at last departed from life. Heraclitus, after so many speculations on the conflagration of the universe, was filled with the water of the dropsy, and died smeared all over with a poultice of dung. And lice destroyed Democritus, and other lice killed Socrates. What means all this? You have embarked, you have made the voyage, you are come to shore, now disembark. If indeed to another life there is no want of gods, not even there, but if to a state without sensation, you will cease to be held in thrall by pains and pleasures, and to be a slave to the vessel of the body, which is as much inferior as that which serves it is superior, for the one is intelligence and deity, the other is earth and corruption. Do not waste the remainder of your life in thoughts about other people which do not refer to some object of common utility. For you lose the opportunity of doing something else when you have such thoughts as, what is such a person doing, and why, and what is he saying, and what is he thinking of, and what is he contriving, and whatever else of the kind makes us wander away from the observation of our own sovereign mind. We should put a stop to everything that is without a clear purpose and useless in the series of our thoughts, but most of all the prying and the malignant. A man should learn to turn his mind only to those things about which, if one should suddenly ask, "What do you have now in your thoughts?" with perfect openness you might immediately answer, "This or that." so that from your words it should be plain that everything in you is without guile and benevolent, and such as befits a social animal, and one that cares not for thoughts about pleasure or sensual enjoyments at all, nor has any rivalry or envy and suspicion, or anything else for which you would blush if you were to say that you had it in your mind. Such a man who no longer puts off being among the company of the best of his kind is like a priest and minister of the gods. He also makes use of the deity that is planted within him, leaving him uncontaminated by pleasure, unharmed by any pain, untouched by any insult, feeling no wrong, a fighter for the noblest prize, one who cannot be overpowered by any passion, dyed deep with justice, accepting with all his soul everything that happens and is assigned to him as his portion. And but rarely, and only out of great necessity and for the general interest, thinking about what another says or does or thinks. For it is only what belongs to himself that he makes his business, and he thinks merely of that which is allotted to himself out of the sum total of things, and he makes his own acts fair, and he is persuaded that whatever his lot may be, it is good. For the lot which is assigned to each man is carried along with him, and carries him along with it. And he remembers also that every rational animal is his kinsman, and that to care for all men is according to man's nature, and a man should hold on to the opinion not of all, but of those only who confessedly live according to nature. As to those who live not so, he always bears in mind what kind of men they are both at home and outside, both by night and by day, and what they are, and with what men they live an impure life. Accordingly, he does not value at all the praise which comes from such men, since they are not even satisfied with themselves. Labour not unwillingly, nor without regard to the common interest, nor without due consideration, nor with distraction. Nor let studied ornament set off your thoughts, and be not either a man of many words, or busy about too many things. And further, let the deity which is in you be the guardian of the being that you are. A man, and of ripe age, and engaged in political issues, and a Roman, and a ruler, who has taken his post like a soldier waiting for the signal which summons him from life, and ready to go, having no further need of either oath of loyalty or the testimony of any man. Be cheerful also, and seek not external help, nor the tranquillity which others may give. A man then must stand erect, not be kept erect by others. If you find in human life anything better than justice, truth, temperance, fortitude, and in a word anything better than your own mind's self-sufficiency, which enables you to do things according to right reason and in the condition that is assigned to you without your own choice, if, I say, you see anything better than this, turn to it with all your soul and enjoy that which you have found to be the best. But if nothing appears to be better than the deity which is planted in you, which has subjected to itself all your appetites and carefully examines all your thoughts, and, as Socrates said, has detached itself from the persuasions of the senses, and has submitted itself to the gods and cares for mankind, if you find everything else smaller and of less value than this, then give place to nothing else. For if you do once diverge and incline to it, you will no longer, without distraction, be able to give the preference to that good thing which is your proper possession and your own. For it is not right that anything of any other kind, such as praise from the many, or power, or enjoyment of pleasure, should come into competition with that which is rationally and politically or practically good. All these things may seem to afford a temporary small advantage, but then they can suddenly overmaster us and carry us away. You must, I say, simply and freely choose the better, and hold to it. As for the saying, that which is useful is the better, well then, If it is useful to you as a rational being, keep to it. But if it is only useful to you as an animal, turn aside and maintain your judgment without arrogance. Only take care that you make the inquiry by a sure method. Never value anything as profitable to yourself which shall compel you to break your promise, to lose your self-respect, to hate any man, to suspect, to curse, to act the hypocrite, to desire anything which needs walls and curtains. For he who has preferred to everything intelligence and the guardian spirit within and the worship of its excellence, acts no tragic part, does not groan, will not need either solitude or much company, and what is chief of all, he will live without either pursuing or flying from death. Whether for a longer or a shorter time he shall have the soul enclosed in the body, he cares not at all. For even if he must depart immediately, he will go as readily as if he were going to do anything else which can be done with decency and order, taking care of this only all through life, that his thoughts turn not away from anything which belongs to an intelligent animal and a member of a civil community. In the mind of one who is chastened and purified, you will find no corrupt matter, nor impurity, nor any sore skinned over. Nor is his life incomplete when fate overtakes him, as one may say of an actor who leaves the stage before ending and finishing the play. Moreover, there is in him nothing servile, nor affected, nor too closely bound to other things, nor yet detached from other things, nothing worthy of blame, nothing which seeks a hiding place. Revere the faculty of discrimination. Whether there shall exist in your sovereign mind any opinion inconsistent with nature and the constitution of the rational animal depends entirely on this faculty. And this faculty promises freedom from hasty judgment, and friendship towards men, and obedience to the gods. Throw away then all else, but hold to these few things only. Bear in mind as well that every man lives only this present time, which is an indivisible point, and that all the rest of his life is either past or it is uncertain. Short, then, is the time which every man lives, and small the nook of the earth where he lives, and short, too, the longest posthumous fame, which is itself only sustained by a succession of poor human beings who will very soon die, and who know not even themselves, much less him who died long ago. To the aids which have been mentioned, let this one still be added. Make for yourself a definition or description of the thing which is presented to you so as to see distinctly what kind of a thing it is in its substance, in its naked reality, in its entirety, and tell yourself its proper name, and the names of the things of which it has been compounded, and into which it will be resolved. For nothing is so productive of elevation of mind as to be able to examine methodically and truly every object which is presented to you in life, and always to look at things so as to see at the same time the nature of this universe, and what kind of use everything performs in it, and what value everything has with reference to the whole, and what value with reference to man, who is a citizen of the highest city, of which all other cities are like households. What each thing is, and of what it is composed, and how long it is the nature of this thing to endure, which now makes an impression on me, and what virtue I need to bring to it, such as gentleness, manliness, truth, fidelity, simplicity, contentment, and the rest. Wherefore, on every occasion a man should say, "This comes from God, and this is according to the apportionment and spinning of the thread of destiny, and such like coincidence and chance. And this is from human agency, and a kinsman and partner, albeit one who knows not what is true to his nature. But I do know, for this reason I behave towards him according to the natural law of fellowship with benevolence and justice. At the same time, however, in things that are morally neutral, I attempt to give him what is his due. If you work at that which is before you, following right reason seriously, vigorously, calmly, without allowing anything else to distract you, but keeping your divine part pure, as if you might be bound to give it back immediately, if you hold on to this, expecting nothing, fearing nothing, but satisfied with your present activity as being true to nature, and with heroic truth in every word and sound which you utter, then you will live happy. And there is no man who is able to prevent this. Just as physicians have always their instruments and knives ready for cases that suddenly require their skill, so do you have principles ready for the understanding of things divine and human, and for doing everything, even the smallest thing, with a recollection of the bond that unites the divine and human to one another. For nothing that pertains to man is done well without reference to things divine, and vice versa. Stop wandering aimlessly. You are not going to be reading your own memoirs, nor the histories of the ancient Greeks and Romans, and the selections from books which you were reserving for your old age. Hasten then to the end which you have before you, and throwing away idle hopes, help yourself out, if you care at all for yourself, while it is still in your power. They know not how many things are signified by the words stealing, sowing, buying, keeping quiet, seeing what ought to be done, for this is not effected by the eyes, but by another kind of vision. Body, soul, intelligence. To the body belong sensations, to the soul appetites, to the intelligence principles. To receive the impressions of forms by means of appearances belongs even to animals. To be pulled by the strings of desire belongs both to wild beasts and to men who have made themselves into women, and to a Phalaris and a Nero, and to have the intelligence that guides to what would appear to be suitable action belongs also to those who do not believe in the gods, and who betray their country and do their impure deeds behind closed doors. If then everything else is common to all that I have mentioned, there remains that which is peculiar to the good man, to be pleased and content with what happens, and with the thread which is spun for him, and not to defile the divinity which is planted in his breast, nor disturb it by a crowd of images, but to preserve it tranquil, following it obediently as a god, neither saying anything contrary to truth, nor doing anything contrary to justice. And if all men refuse to believe that he lives a simple, modest, and contented life, he is neither angry with any of them, nor does he deviate from the way which leads to the end of life, to which a man ought to come pure, tranquil, ready to depart, and without any sense of compulsion, perfectly reconciled to his lot. Book 4. The power that rules within us, when it is according to nature, is responsive to events, so that it always easily adapts itself to that which is present and that which is presented to it. For it requires no preferred material to work on, but it takes the given conditions to move towards its purpose, and it makes a material for itself out of that which opposes it, as fire lays hold of what falls into it, by which a small light would have been extinguished. When the fire is strong, it soon appropriates to itself the matter which is heaped on it, and consumes it, and rises higher by means of this very material. Let no act be done without a purpose, nor otherwise than according to the perfect principles of life's art. Men seek retreats for themselves, houses in the country, seashores and mountains, and you too tend to desire such things very much. But this is altogether a mark of the most common sort of men, for it is in your power to retire into yourself whenever you choose to. for there is nowhere with more quiet or freedom from trouble for a man to retire to than his own soul, particularly when he has within him such thoughts that by looking into them he is immediately in perfect tranquillity. And by tranquillity I mean nothing else than the good ordering of the mind. Constantly, then, give yourself this retreat, and renew yourself, and let the principles you turn to be brief and fundamental, which, as soon as you shall recall them, will be sufficient to cleanse the soul completely, and to send you back free from all discontent with the things to which you must return. For what are you discontented with? The wickedness of men? Recall to your mind this conclusion, that rational animals exist for one another, and that to tolerate is a part of justice, and that men do wrong involuntarily. And consider how many already, after mutual enmity, suspicion, hatred, and fighting, have been stretched dead, reduced to ashes, and be quiet at last. But perhaps you are dissatisfied with what is assigned to you out of the universe. Recollect these alternatives. Either there is providence, or there are just atoms, a fortuitous concurrence of things. Or remember the arguments by which it has been proved that the world is a kind of political community, and be quiet at last. But perhaps the snares and ills of the flesh will still fasten upon you. Consider then further that the mind, when it has once drawn itself apart and discovered its own power, does not mingle with the breath, whether the breathing be light or heavy. And think also of all that you have heard and assented to about pain and pleasure, and be quiet at last. But perhaps the desire of the thing called fame will torment you. See how soon everything is forgotten, and look at the chaos of infinite time on each side of the present, and the emptiness of applause, and the changeableness and want of judgment in those who pretend to give praise, and the narrowness of the space within which it is circumscribed, and be quiet at last. For the whole earth is but a speck, and how small a nook in it is this your dwelling. And how many and what kind of people in it are they who will praise you? This then remains. Remember to retire into this little territory of your own, and above all do not distract or torment yourself, but be free and look at things as a man, as a human being, as a citizen, as a mortal. But among the things readiest to hand to which you shall turn, let there be these two. One is that things do not touch the soul, for they are external to its movement, but your anguish comes only from judgments within. The other is that all these things which you see now are changing and will cease to be, and constantly bear in mind how many of these changes you have already witnessed. The universe is transformation. Life is judgment. If the intellectual faculty is common to all, then the power of reason also, that which makes us rational beings, is common to all. If this is so, also common to all is the reason that commands us what to do and what not to do. If this is so, there is a common law also. If this is so, we are fellow citizens. If this is so, we are members of some political community. If this is so, the world is in this manner a state. In what other political community will anyone say that the whole human race is included? And from thence, from this common political community, comes our very intellectual faculty and reasoning faculty and our capacity for law. Or whence do they come? For as my earthy nature comes from the earth, and that which is watery in me comes from another element, my breath from some other source, and that which is hot and fiery from its own peculiar source. For nothing comes out of nothing, nor does nothing return to non-existence. So also the intellectual part comes from some source. Death is such as birth is, a mystery of nature. There is a composition out of various elements and a decomposition into the same elements, and altogether not a thing of which any man should be ashamed, for it is not contrary to the nature of a reasonable animal, and not contrary to the reason of our constitution. For such persons it is natural that these things should occur. It is a matter of necessity, and if a man will not have it so, he will not allow the fig tree to give juice. But anyway, bear this in mind, that within a very short time both you and he will be dead, and soon not even your names will be left behind. Take away your judging thought, and then there is taken away the complaint, I have been harmed. Take away the complaint, I have been harmed, and the harm is taken away. That which does not make a man worse than he was also does not make his life worse, nor does it harm him either from without or from within. The nature of that which is universally useful has been compelled to do this. Consider the saying, everything that happens, happens as it ought, and if you observe carefully, you will find it to be so. I do not say as it ought only with respect to the conditioned continuity of things, but with respect to what is just, and as if someone were assigning to each thing its value. Continue to observe, then, as you have begun, and whatever you do, do it in conjunction with being good, in the sense in which a man is properly understood to be good. Keep to this in every action. If someone does you wrong, do not take his view of things or see things as he would have you see them, but look at them as they are in truth. A man should always have these two principles in readiness. The one, to do only what the reasoning faculty that is present with the power of rule and legislation may suggest for the good of all. The other, to change your position if there is any one at hand to set you right and to move you from an opinion. But this change of opinion must proceed only from a clear persuasion as to what is just or to the common good and the like, not because it appears pleasant or makes one popular. Do you have the power of reason? I have. Why then do you not use it? For if this faculty does its work, what else do you need to worry about? You have existed as but a part of the universe. You shall disappear into that which produced you, or rather, you shall be transformed and received back into its creative principle. Many grains of frankincense on the same altar. One falls before, another falls after, but it makes no difference. Within 10 days you will seem a god to those to whom you are now a beast and an ape, if you will return to your principles and the worship of reason. You are not going to live 10,000 years. Death hangs over you. While you live, while it is in your power, be good. How much trouble he avoids who does not look to see what his neighbour says or does or thinks, but only to what he does himself, that it may be just and pure, or as Agathon says, look not round at the depraved morals of others, but run straight along the line without deviating from it. He who has a vehement desire for posthumous fame does not consider that every one of those who remember him will himself also die very soon, then likewise they who succeed them, until the whole remembrance of him shall have been extinguished, as a transmission through men who foolishly admire and perish. But even if you imagine that those who will remember are immortal, and that the remembrance will be immortal, what then is this to you? And I do not say merely what is it to the dead, but what is it to the living? What is praise except in so far as it has a certain utility? As it is, you reject the seasonable gift of nature, clinging to something else. Everything which is in any way beautiful is beautiful in itself, and is an end in itself. It does not have praise as part of it. Nothing is made worse nor better by being praised. I affirm this also of the things that are commonly called beautiful, for example, material things and works of art. That which is really beautiful has no need of anything, no more than law, no more than truth, no more than benevolence or modesty. Which of these things is beautiful because it is praised, or spoiled by being blamed? Is such a thing as an emerald made worse than it was if it is not praised, or gold, ivory, purple, a lyre, a little knife, a flower, a shrub? If souls continue to exist, how does the air give room for all of them from eternity? Well, how does the earth hold the bodies of those who have been buried in it from the remotest time? For as here the mutation of these bodies after a certain continuance, whatever it may be, and their dissolution make room for other dead bodies, so the souls which are removed into the air after subsisting for some time are transmuted and diffused, and assume a fiery nature by being received into the creative intelligence of the universe, and in this way make room for the fresh souls which come to dwell there. This is the answer which a man might give on the hypothesis of souls continuing to exist. But we must not only think of the number of bodies which are thus buried, but also of the number of animals which are daily eaten by us and other animals. A vast number consumed, and thus in a manner buried in the bodies of those who feed on them. And nevertheless this earth receives them by reason of the transformation of these bodies into blood and into the elements of air or fire. What is it to investigate into the truth in this matter? It is to mark out that which is material from that which is the cause of form, the formal. Do not be whirled about by your thoughts, but in every volition have respect to justice, and on the occasion of every sense impression maintain the faculty of comprehension or understanding. Everything that is harmonious to you, O universe, harmonizes with me. Nothing for me is too early nor too late, which is in due time for you. Everything is fruit to me, O nature, which your seasons bring. From you are all things, in you are all things, to you all things return. The poet says, "Dear city of Cecrops," and will not you say, "Dear city of Zeus"? If you would be contented, says the philosopher Democritus, don't do very much. But consider if it would not be better to say, do whatever is necessary, whatever the reason of the naturally social animal requires, and however it requires it to be done. For this brings not only the tranquillity which comes from doing what is right, but also that which comes from doing little. For the greatest part of what we say and do being unnecessary, if one takes this excess away, one will have more leisure and less uneasiness. Accordingly, on every occasion, a man should ask himself, is this one of the unnecessary things? And he should excise not only unnecessary acts, but also the unnecessary thoughts that generate superfluous acts. Try how the life of the good man suits you, the life of him who is satisfied with his portion from the whole, and satisfied with his own just acts and benevolent disposition. You have seen something of that other kind of life. Now try this. Do not get anxious. Make yourself all simplicity. Someone does something wrong? It is to himself that he does the wrong. Something happens to you? Well, out of the universe from the beginning, everything that happens has been apportioned and spun out to you. In a word, thy life is short. Profit from this present moment by the aid of reason and justice. Be sober, be relaxed. Whether it is a well-arranged universe or a chaos huddled together, it is still a universe. Can a certain order subsist in you with yet disorder in the whole? Particularly when all things that seem so separate from one another yet diffuse into and relate to one another. An evil character, a womanish character, a stubborn character, a character that is bestial, childish, animal, stupid, counterfeit, scurrilous, fraudulent, tyrannical. If he is a stranger to the universe who does not know what is in it, no less is he a stranger who does not know what is going on in it. He is a runaway who flies from social awareness. He is blind who shuts the eyes of the understanding. He is poor who is dependent on another and does not hold in himself all the necessities of life. He is an abscess on the universe who withdraws and separates himself from the reason of our common nature through being displeased with the things that happen to him. For the same nature produces this and has produced you too. He is a piece rent asunder from the state who tears his own soul from that of all reasoning animals, which is a single unity. This philosopher is without a tunic, another is without a book. Here is another half naked. Bread I have not, he says, yet I abide by reason. But for myself I have all the fruit of learning, and still I am not faithful to my reason. Love the art, poor as it may be, which you have learned, and be content with it, and pass through the rest of your life like one who has entrusted to the gods with his whole soul all that he has, making yourself neither the tyrant nor the slave of any man. Consider, for example, the times of Vespasian. You will see all the same things: people marrying, bringing up children, sick, dying, warring, feasting, trafficking, cultivating the ground, flattering, obstinately arrogant, suspecting, plotting, wishing for certain people to die, grumbling about the present, falling in love, heaping up treasure, desiring consulship, kingly power. Well then, that life of these people no longer exists at all. Again, remove to the times of Trajan. Again, all is the same. Their life, too, is gone. In like manner, view also the other epochs of time and of whole nations, and see how many, after great efforts, soon fell and were resolved into the elements. But chiefly you should think of those whom you have yourself known, distracting themselves about idle things, neglecting to do what was in accordance with their own nature and constitution, and hold firmly to this and to be content with it. And herein it is necessary to remember that the attention we give to things is proportionate to their value, for thus you will not be dissatisfied if you bring to smaller matters no more application than they call for. The words which were formerly familiar are now antiquated. So also the names of those who were famed of old are now in a manner antiquated. Camillus, Ciso, Volesus, Leonatus, and a little after also Scipio and Cato, then Augustus, then also Hadrian and Antoninus. For all things soon pass away and become a mere tale, and complete oblivion soon buries them. And I say this of those who have shone with a wondrous lustre. For the rest, as soon as they have breathed out their breath, they are gone, and no man speaks of them. And to conclude the matter, what is even an eternal remembrance? A mere nothing. What then is that about which we ought to employ our serious endeavours? This one thing, thoughts just and acts social, and words which never lie, and a disposition which gladly accepts all that happens as necessary, as comprehensible, as flowing from a principle and source that is also comprehensible. Willingly give yourself up to the fates, to Clotho the spinner, allowing her to spin your thread into whatever things she pleases. Everything is only for a day, both that which remembers and that which is remembered. Observe constantly the changing nature of all things, and accustom yourself to consider that the nature of the universe loves nothing so much as to change things from how they are into something else, new and yet similar. For everything that exists is in a way the seed of that which will be. Even the idea of the seed which you hold on to as unchangeably that which is cast into the earth or into a womb is quite unphilosophical. You will soon die, and you are not yet clear-minded, nor free from anxiety, nor without fear of being hurt by external things, nor kindly disposed towards all. Nor do you yet look for wisdom only in acting justly. Examine men's sovereign principles, even those of the wise, what kind of things they avoid and what kind they pursue. What is evil to you cannot subsist in the sovereign principle of another, nor yet in any turning and mutation of your circumstances. Where is it, then? It is in that part of you in which subsists the power of making judgments about evils. Let this power, then, not make such judgments, and all is well. And if that which is nearest to it, the poor body, is cut or burnt, or invaded by alien matter and rottenness, nevertheless let the part which makes judgments about these things be quiet. That is, let it judge that nothing is either bad or good which can happen equally to the bad man and the good. For that which happens equally to him who lives contrary to nature and to him who lives according to nature is neither according to nature nor contrary to nature. Constantly regard the universe as one living being, having one substance and one soul, and observe how all things have reference to one perception, the perception of this one living being, and how all things act with one movement, and how all things that exist are the cooperating causes of each other. Observe the continuous spinning of the thread and the intricate network of the web. You are a little soul bearing about a corpse, as Epictetus used to say. It is no evil for things to undergo change, and no good for things to subsist in consequence of change. Time is like a river made up of the events that happen, and it is a violent stream, for as soon as a thing has been seen, it is carried away, and another comes in its place, and this will be carried away too. Everything that happens is as familiar and well known as the rose in spring and the fruit in summer. For such is disease and death and calumny and treachery and whatever else delights, fools, or vexes them. In the series of things, those which follow are always aptly fitted to those which have gone before. For this series is not like a mere enumeration of disjointed things, which has only a necessary sequence, but it is a rational connection. And as all existing things are arranged together harmoniously, so the things which come into existence exhibit no mere succession, but a certain wonderful relationship. Always remember the saying of Heraclitus, that the death of earth is to become water, and the death of water is to become air, and the death of air is to become fire, and reversely. And think too of his image of the man who forgets where the way leads, and his saying that men quarrel with that which they are most constantly in communion, the reason which governs the universe, and that they are constantly surprised by the things they daily meet with, and that we ought not to act and speak as if we were asleep, for even in sleep we seem to act and speak. And that we ought not, like children who learn from their parents, simply act and speak as we have been taught.